I'm Laura Murphy Oates, and this is The Full Story.
On a warm Sydney day and the eve of his trip to the United States, the Prime Minister announces some spring cleaning from his front bench. Christian Porter is gone.
Well, what Mr. Porter does now is a matter for him. He's not a member of my cabinet.
Christian Porter, the former Attorney General who one day hoped to be Prime Minister, has resigned from federal cabinet after he declared that anonymous donors helped pay his legal fees in his defamation case against the ABC.
He either discloses where this money was from or he gives it back. There are no other choices.
Despite mounting pressure for more transparency on this matter, Porter says he has limited information about who donated this money and will not be taking steps to reveal their identity. So, how do his actions stack up against the general expectations and rules for public officials? And what could the future hold for Christian Porter in the Morrison government? Today, the resignation of Christian Porter. It's Tuesday, the 21st of September. How are you, Paul?
Yeah, good.
Paul Karp is a political reporter at Guardian Australia.
Happy to give it a whirl.
Paul, last time we spoke to you on the podcast, Christian Porter had just launched his defamation case against the ABC for their story about an alleged historical rape, an allegation that Porter strenuously denies. I wonder if we can start with what happened with that defamation case.
Litigation over. Christian Porter emerged this afternoon to welcome the end of his defamation case against the ABC.
Well, in late May, they agreed to discontinue the case in return for the ABC adding a small editor's note to the story saying,
"The ABC did not intend to suggest that Mr. Porter had committed the criminal offences alleged."
That they hadn't intended to convey a meaning that he was guilty of that offence.
However, both parties accept that some readers misinterpreted the article as an accusation of guilt against Mr. Porter. That reading is regretted.
Mm. They also paid some costs of mediation, but no damages and no apology.
The terms of the settlement are confidential. All parties have agreed not to pursue the matter any further.
So when did questions first arise about who was paying for Porter's legal fees in this case?
This was set up to be an incredibly expensive case with, you know, several high-profile barristers and, you know, a trial of up to 6 weeks. So it was going to be an incredibly expensive case. And in March, Guardian Australia and news.com.au both approached Porter and asked if he would guarantee that he would be paying the full cost of it or whether he had any sort of assistance from anyone else. Mm. And all that they would say back was that there'll be no taxpayer money being used by Porter to fight the case, but they never guaranteed that it would be all his own money.
Christian Porter, thanks so much for your time. We haven't spoken in a while. How have the last couple of months been?
Well, Laura, you know, everyone has these challenging periods in their life, but...
Then in May, Porter went on Sky News.
Whether you're in government or in the community, if you believe that you've been defamed, then you've got the right to take litigation and action, and that's what I've done, and it comes at a great cost, financial, personal...
And talked about having received unsolicited offers of assistance.
There were just lever arch folder after lever arch folder of messages of support and money in emails, completely unsolicited, but I'm not at the point where I'm sort of, you know, crowdfunding or anything like that, that some people have done to quite properly if that's what they want to do to fund litigation, but I'm not.
But he said he hadn't taken any money so far. He said only that I will declare a donation or a gift if and when I have to and not before.
If at any point in time anything arises that requires me to make disclosures that members of parliament regularly do, of course I'll do that.
Have people offered donations?
Right, so Porter is asked about how he's paying for this expensive defamation case time and time again, and he hints that he may seek some form of help but that he will disclose that properly. Can you remind me, What do politicians need to disclose when it comes to financial interests, and how do they do it?
So the rules require MPs to disclose gifts of more than $300 and also any other interests where a conflict might arise with their public duties or could be seen to arise. There are similar obligations in the ministerial standards that include that ministers can't encourage or solicit gifts that are connected with their duties, and that they also have to avoid perception of any conflict of interest.
And how do they disclose that? What does that look like?
There's something called the Register of Members' Interests, which MPs update periodically if they do receive gifts. So if you've got eagle eyes and you're looking at it, you can see things like a corporation buying someone a gift to the AFL Grand Final, or letting them, you know, come watch the AFL Grand Final in the corporate box, things like that. Or in this case...
In his declaration of interests, Lee, he said that part of the contribution to the payment of my fees by a blind trust known as the Legal Services Trust...
Porter disclosed last week that his litigation with the ABC part-funded by a blind trust called the Legal Services Trust.
Has been forthcoming, and he says, as a potential beneficiary, I have no access to information about the conduct and funding of the trust.
Right, so this is where Porter's problems really started to go downhill with this declaration that he made. Firstly, can you clarify for me, what is a trust?
So a trust is an obligation to use property to benefit someone else. So someone will effectively donate money and in setting up the trust, and then a person called a trustee will administer it in deciding things like where it's invested, you know, when to give the property of the trust away, and in this case, to make a gift or a distribution from the trust to Christian Porter to pay for his legal bills.
And what do we know about this specific legal services trust that Porter accepted money from for his defamation case?
Well, unlike companies, trusts don't have to be registered. So him putting on his register that he received money from the Legal Services Trust doesn't tell us anything. It doesn't tell us who put money into the trust. It doesn't tell us who the trustees are that administered it and decided to give him funding for his case.
Right, so surely Porter would have some interest as to who's behind this trust and who's paying these fees, though. Would he be able to find out who's behind it if he wanted to?
Well, the first thing to say is to point back to what he said in May, which is that he was aware of unsolicited offers of help. So he might have had some idea who was contributing based on people that approached him saying that they wanted to contribute. The other way he might know is that just because someone has donated on the basis that they will remain confidential doesn't mean that you can't ask the trustee to go back to them and change that agreement to be able to name them.
Right, so it's revealed that Porter has taken these anonymous donations. Does this breach any rules according to what Porter is supposed to do with these types of gifts or donations?
The first hurdle is the ministerial standards, which requires you to be free of conflicts of interest, but also perceptions of conflict. Now, the problem that the blind trust creates is that how can he satisfy Scott Morrison that he doesn't have a conflict of interest, and how can he satisfy the Australian public at large, who might perceive that he does, if we don't know who the donors into the trust are? The Australian Electoral Commission has said it doesn't breach electoral laws because it's not in a campaign period and it's not, you know, money that's being spent on a political campaign, so they don't apply to this. So after Porter's declaration, Scott Morrison asked his department to give advice about whether or not the declaration conforms with ministerial standards, whether or not he'd met the rules.
So Morrison launches an inquiry into the donations to be headed up by his own office. What's Porter's response to the idea that he may have breached ministerial guidelines by accepting this money?
Porter remained firm that he'd undertaken disclosure in accordance with the requirements of the register and consistent with previous members' disclosure of circumstances where the cost of personal legal matters had been mitigated by contributions or reductions in fees, i.e. he'd coloured in between the lines.
What was the reaction both to this revelation about the trust and the Prime Minister's response?
Basically, that if a trust can be used to disguise the ultimate source of funding, then that drives a truck through the rules.
I mean, this is the same as somebody in a mask walking into Mr. Porter's office and delivering a chaff bag full of cash and saying, right, there you are, that'll help you with your legal expenses. I'm off, you don't know who I am.
Former Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull, who, you know, actually promoted Porter to Attorney General when he was Prime Minister, was very critical of the decision to accept the money without disclosing where it came from.
Mm.
And I am staggered that Porter thought he could get away with it, and I will be even more staggered if the Prime Minister allows this to stand. It is a shocking affront to transparency.
He called it an extraordinary abrogation of responsibility and said it's essentially an MP deciding to take a large gift without disclosing or knowing who it was from.
But let's put it this way. If he does not know the identity of the donor, he should not accept the money. Full stop.
Can I make some comments before I take questions about Christian Porter? Christian Porter's position is untenable.
So Labor leader Anthony Albanese said it didn't pass the pub test.
There is such a stench around this and around Christian Porter that all that is missing is a cloud of blowflies. This stinks.
And Shadow Attorney General Mark Dreyfus.
It shouldn't be left to the Parliament to deal with this when we go back on the 18th of October.
Said it shouldn't go to a farcical inquiry run by, you know, the head of PM&C, Phil Gaetjens. The Prime Minister should just make a call and act.
And requiring either that Mr. Porter return the money if he genuinely does not know where it's from, or that he finds out where it's from and discloses it.
Next, the question of accountability for Christian Porter. So it sounds like pressure was growing. What happened next?
The ministerial standards I and my ministers take very seriously, as we should, as all governments all around the country should.
On Sunday, before jetting off to the US, Scott Morrison announced that Christian Porter...
He has this afternoon taken the appropriate course of action to uphold those standards by tendering his resignation as a minister this afternoon, and I have accepted his resignation.
Morrison said that was appropriate thing to do because Porter had been unable to say who the donors into the trust were.
And it isn't just about actual conflicts. It is about, under the standards, for ministers to have an obligation to avoid any perception of conflicts of interest. And that is what ultimately has led the minister to make that.
After Morrison's press conference, though, we learned in Christian Porter's statement that he did not accept that he had broken the rules. He was resigning because he acknowledged that it had become a distraction for the government.
So is Morrison saying that Porter had broken the rules?
Not in as many words. He noted that the rules require that someone avoid both actual conflicts of interest and the perception of conflicts. But he hadn't got the advice back from his department yet, saying one way or the other whether Porter had broken the rules. Porter took matters into his own hands by resigning. So although the Prime Minister described it as appropriate that he had done so because he wasn't able to disclose the source of the funding, Morrison didn't definitively say that he had broken the rules.
Right. So, look, we're unsure if the rules have been broken, but Porter stepped down, so no more questions is the gist of that.
Correct. And as soon as you're no longer a minister, the ministerial standards don't apply to you anymore. So it shifts the conversation away from the ministerial standards towards the member's register of interest.
Did Christian Porter offer any further defence of himself during his resignation?
Well, he reiterated that he had no right to access the information about the funding or conduct of the trust, but then added, on my request, the trustee provided an assurance that none of the contributors were lobbyists or prohibited foreign entities. Porter, in this statement, spoke at length about the fact that he was unwilling to pressure the trust for more information and break donors' confidentiality. And he also suggested that the donors might have wanted to stay anonymous because otherwise they would be attacked in a trial by mob if they were identified for supporting him.
As you mentioned earlier, he has the power to try and find out the identity of these donors. But what he's saying here is that he won't reveal their identities to protect them. Is that right?
He said that in donating the money to the trust, they had an intention that they would remain anonymous and that would be protected by confidentiality. And he is respecting and sticking to that intention by not going back and asking for more information or to allow him to identify them.
What's been the response to Porter's resignation?
On ABC Perth yesterday,
Christian Porter has resigned from Cabinet. Does that end the matter?
Anthony Albanese was asked if resignation ended the matter, and he said no.
It certainly doesn't. There are so many questions which remain unanswered. Who provided this money? Why was it provided? How was it provided? Is there any conflict of interest? Does anyone who provided money have contracts with the government?
And MPs have to disclose to Parliament where they received gifts. So they are now pushing for Porter to either pay the money back or disclose the donors.
Of course he should give the money back. He should never have received it on an anonymous basis in the first place.
And they can pursue that when Parliament comes back by attempting to refer that to the Privileges Committee, which is the one that's in charge of disclosure.
What about Morrison's department's investigation? Where is that?
Well, that's a dead end because once someone's no longer a minister, the ministerial standards no longer apply to them. So Phil Gaitchens is not going to hand down a report saying one way or the other whether what Porter did was within the rules. They might at some point advise the PM that, you know, further details of trust have to be declared or something to add to the rules, but it's too late for any of that to bind Porter or have any bearing because he's already out of the ministry.
Do you still have questions about this matter? I mean, do you think that people will be continuing to look at it?
Well, the first question is how much money it is, which he's never actually said. Scott Morrison was asked about it and he said, oh, you'll find that information on his declaration, except you won't. You'll only find that they part paid it. You won't find the amount of money. So how much money was it? I would want to know how many donors there were, because if it's just a few people, then the narrative of masses of people were outraged by the ABC coverage and, you know, wrote me a check for $2.50 is very different to a few very influential people found hundreds of thousands of dollars between them to give. I think while Porter may say that he doesn't definitively know who gave money, it would be interesting if he were asked who the unsolicited offers that he referred to in May were from, and did he facilitate them donating to the trust by, for example, referring them to his lawyers, who then could tell them how to donate to the trust.
So there are some very key questions to be asked of Porter, especially about his links to this trust.
Yes, he's never said when he first became aware that it existed, when he first became aware that he was a potential beneficiary of it. On Friday, Scott Morrison said that Porter had only most recently become aware of becoming a beneficiary, but that doesn't answer when he first became aware that he might. When he first became aware that people were putting this money together that might down the line pay for his legal fees. Because he wasn't ruling out taking money from external sources in March, and he knew about unsolicited offers in May, and he wouldn't rule out that he already had an understanding with someone to pay in May.
Are there also questions to be asked about when Morrison knew about all of this?
Yeah. So did you know that Christian Porter's legal fees were part paid by the trust before he declared it on the register of interest?
I refer to my answer.
Well, Scott Morrison was asked twice on Thursday about whether he was told before the public disclosure, and he just didn't say.
Well, I've outlined what the pathway forward is, and that's what we're pursuing.
Why not just ask him to declare it was the genuine source of the money?
I'm wondering what all this says about this system that we have in federal politics about declaring financial interests and donations. That one, all of this appears to be legal as far as we know, and two, it's unclear according to the Prime Minister that any rules have been broken here. What does that say about that system?
Well, I think people would be shocked to learn that if something is given in a personal capacity and received in a personal capacity, that there is a lower standard of probity on that than if it is somehow connected to their ministerial duties. So I think there are some troubling lessons from this about how the standards are lower if something is received and given in a personal capacity.
It seems like over the past year, Porter has been somewhat of a distraction for the Morrison government. But despite that, he's managed to stay in cabinet. Why is this all coming to a head now, do you think?
There were some consequences for him, but they were largely triggered by the defamation action, because that created some issues for him retaining the Attorney General's portfolio. So he was shifted sideways in cabinet by taking on industry and science instead of Attorney General's, and demoted slightly by losing the position of Leader of the House. But at that point, Morrison was still satisfied that Porter was a fit person and met ministerial standards. The difference in this is that having taken money from an unknown source because the money was donated confidentially, Porter was not able to assure Prime Minister that he didn't have a perceived conflict of interest. But even then, it was his resignation, it was his choice to leave the ministry. There was no ruling that he had breached the rules or that he, you know, hadn't met that standard. It's just the Prime Minister's observation that he was unable to do that, so it was appropriate to resign.
So, Paul, Porter is now on the backbench. It's been a tumultuous year. I mean, what is his political future in Morrison's government going forward?
Well, he's not a minister anymore, and although he was previously touted as a potential prime minister, I think we can rule that one out. He said that he will recontest the next election in his West Australian seat of Pearce. So it's up to voters. If voters decide that it's an okay standard and they're going to vote on other issues, he might stay in the parliament. If they decide that MPs should have to say where money came from as well as ministers, then it could count against him at the election. Similarly, the question of the historical rape allegation, which he denies, friends of the deceased woman have said that they are going to try and make that part of the coming election, the ethical standards of the Morrison government, what they did or didn't do to investigate that. So ultimately, it is for the electors in Pearce to determine whether or not they continue to be represented by Porter.
How could this reflect on the Liberal Party? Was Porter running in the next election?
If this essentially anonymous donation was not good enough to stay a minister but is good enough to stay an MP, then it's possible that he's permanently lowered the standards for MPs in all parties, and that the Liberal Party at least is prepared to put up with this if he stays the candidate for Pearce.
Good morning, gents. Barnaby, the PM cannot afford to lose him, because then you'd be forced into minority government. If that wasn't the case, would he be gone?
Well, he's not resigning. He has gone now, like so many of us in a period of our career, to the corridor of the nearly dead that sits above the Comcars. And I was there for a bit over three years.
In an interview with Channel 7's Sunrise program, Acting Prime Minister Barnaby Joyce said he believes Christian Porter should be able to return to the front bench in the future.
He's resigned. He's resigned. I bet you his electorate won't resign from him, though. And, I'll put money that we'll see him back again.
That's it for today. This episode was produced by Jane Lee, Ellen Leibeater and Joe Koning, who also did the sound design. Mixing by Camilla Hannon. The executive producers of Full Story are Miles Muttignoni, Gabrielle Jackson and myself, Maura Murphy-Oates. If you liked this episode, don't forget to leave a rating or a review. Okay, catch you tomorrow.